So let's just jump right in. My name is Michelle Hill, and I am from Veritas Christian Academy, and I do teach fifth grade there, which is my favorite grade. I had so much fun this past year, and writing is one of my passions, so hopefully this will be something that you can glean some information from and take back to your school. Veritas, if you don't know, is getting ready to start its 11th year, which is we're really proud of that. Just went through accreditation, and whoo, the teachers that are in here that have been through that, I know that you're breathing a sigh of relief. I know that we did. So you should have a handout. If not, if you'll just lift up your hand, we'll make sure you get one. Anybody need one? Okay. Well, we're going to talk about writing. Does anybody need to use the bathroom? That's what my students do. I get ready when I pull out a new writing topic. Oh, Miss Hill, I forgot. I need to call my mom. Can I go right now? And I have a lot of students who at first become very apprehensive about writing, and it's because it's kind of a scary thing. Where do you get started? And that's what we're going to look at today. So what other responses do you get to writing? For me, I had this one child this year who jerked out a piece of paper and said, "Great, what's the topic?" And she was ready to get going. Those are the rare students. Those are the ones that are your overachievers, high achievers, and you just love those. That's what makes teaching easy. But the ones that you have to pull creativity out of are the ones that you have to target. But let's think about ourselves as a teacher. When we think about writing, do we go, "Ooh, it's a good time to go to the bathroom"? There are times that I feel that way because I stand up in front of my class and I think, what creativity do I have to offer today? I don't feel like writing. Well, that's what your students are feeling when they sit down at the desk and they pull out the piece of paper and they look at your prompt and they're like, "I don't feel like writing." So we have to do something to engage them, to make them feel like they can do it. I'm trying to help you so that you feel like you can do it, that you can teach. So these are some tools that we're going to be looking at today. In your packet, I'll be referring to some things. I have some overheads, but everything that is on an overhead should be in your packet, so you can look at that as well and take it home with you and use it. One of the things that causes a challenge in the classroom is that we like to schedule a specific writing time period. You're trying to schedule it after your grammar time or your spelling time, and you think, this is where we're going to do writing. So you get to that point in the day, and your students are dreading it. They see that it's almost 10:30, and it's coming, and so they start squirming. They start losing interest. It's getting closer to lunch. So what you have to do, and what we're learning, and what I have been learning, is that you make writing a process throughout the day. In every subject that you do, it's not math is here, spelling is here, writing is here, history is here. It's something that you weave all the way through everything that you're teaching. That way, they don't know when it's coming. They don't know when you're going to say today is a writing day and we're going to be working on a new prompt. And one of the other problems that we have, the challenges that we have in our classroom, is that we as teachers don't model it enough because of our insecurities, because we feel like we're not prepared enough. And we assume that if we just teach an element and we talk about it, if we're talking about strong adjectives in grammar, that they can automatically just write it into a paper and know exactly how to use it and it flows beautifully. And without that modeling, they're not going to be able to make that smooth transition into their own creative pen writing out what their thoughts are inside of their head. And so one of the things we found this year in my class is that when we got to the element of simile and metaphor, those were two very confusing things. So you know what we did? We went right back to the basic, and the basic for anything is our Bible, and I had them pull it out. Oh goodness. Okay. I had them pull it out, and we went right to Song of Solomon, and I said, look, even ancient writers penned this out in simile and metaphor form. And in chapter 2, verse 1, you tell me what this is. I am a rose of Sharon, a lily of the valleys. What is that? It's a metaphor. And it's in the simplest form. A child can put that, especially a fourth or fifth grader, can get that mental image right away. If you look at verse 2, right below it, they're so partnered together. Like a lily among thorns is my darling among the maidens. And they immediately see that it is a simile. And when they can go right back to that very basic example, and you can start from there, then you can start building and building from it. And that's where we had to go back to. Most of my students knew subject, noun, verb, knew what an adjective was, but don't assume that they do. When they come in, you need to go over all of those things. How in the world can they write you a beautiful paragraph or a book report unless they know how to structure a sentence? So it's all weaving together and working together to make that final beautiful product. So let's skip on down to the third Roman numeral. It says, where do I start? Well, the biggest thing that we have found is that you need to use various subjects. Writing should not just be, like I said, that time right after grammar, right before grammar. We like to incorporate it in our history, in our literature units. That's where we get most of our most exciting and interesting topics and prompts are from the things that they're already studying. So you pull right out of that big wow that they've just experienced. In history, for example, I have the awesome privilege to teach ancient Egypt. And by the time that you get to fifth grade, as you may have heard if you've been in some other sessions, fifth graders love the idea of mummification. And they think it's great about the weighing of the heart ceremony and that there was a god there that would tell you whether you could go to the underworld or if you would go on to the paradise. And they enjoy all of the grossness of it. So do you know what we do? We have them write about it. And they do a three-point expository on items found in an Egyptian tomb. Well, they love that because they all choose the canopic jars that have the liver and the heart and all of the different organs in it. They love to talk about that. They love to talk about the different symbols and the different pieces of jewelry that went into the tomb, the furniture. And so because they have been studying that in history and they're in awe of what people have found in the pyramids and in the tombs, they are excited to write all of that down and excited to share it with someone else. And they're proud of their work. It's much different from saying, what are your three favorite foods? That's the prompt that we use Shirley Grammar, and that's the prompt that was given when we were looking at a three-point expository, your three favorite foods. Well, by fifth grade, by fourth grade even, they're tired of writing about their three favorite foods. But if you can have them write about something that they're excited about, you are going to get even your most disgruntled writers, a lot of your boys, unfortunately, you're going to pull them right out. Some of the best papers that I got on the items found in an Egyptian tomb were my boys because they rose to that occasion. So I'm going to give you an example. Look in the back of your packet for all that glitters. This is from our Egypt unit as well. And I just kind of want to walk you through the process. We do this probably in October or November. This is a little bit more advanced. I don't pull this out at the very beginning of the school year. But this is a primary source, and you can see at the bottom it says adapted from ancient Egyptians. Well, my Egyptian library is always out in my classroom, and they can go back there and they can pull out a book anytime that they want to, when there's some downtime to read. They have seen these paragraphs before if they've read this book. And maybe they didn't take it in and soak it in and really glean a lot from it, but it's something that they've actually put their eyes on before. We have the two paragraphs, and then if you look down here below, these are the sentences represented. Maybe you've used these before, I hope you have. And we get out our highlighter, and for each sentence, we go through and find three or four keywords. And as a class, this is an overhead that I actually use, we write out three or four keywords for each sentence. Do you see the little dotted line there? We cut it off. And they put this away. Actually, they turn it into me. And then all they have is this outline. And when they have that outline, they start building from it their own original work. Just based on those few little key words, they start formulating their own sentences. This, for one, cuts down on the plagiarism because they're not going to be looking right back up here and writing down the exact same sentences. But to go a step further, look, hopefully it's the next page that you have. I also have a checklist that goes along with it. These are all of the things that we have probably been working on in our writing time. All of the different dress-ups, these ideas come from this series right here. It teaches you a little bit on how to use these dress-ups, how to teach them. It's a great resource. But after we have taught these specific things, this is the student checklist. As they're writing, they should be going through, and as they're pinning out their paragraph, yes, I do have an LY word somewhere in a sentence. Yes, I also have an LY word that is the first word in a sentence. And they go down through here and they do each one. For this one, paragraph one and paragraph two checklists are exactly the same. Not trying to, it's a little bit blurry. Tell me when it looks good. Is it changing? I don't think it's moving. They go through and they check off every single one. When it comes time for my student to say, I have finished my paper, Mrs. Hill, I think it looks great, before I even look at it for our official editing time together, I say, did you check everything off on your checklist? Did you identify every single thing in your paper? We have underlining systems and boxing in systems that we have put into place where they use colored pencils and they say, yes, here is my strong adjective. This is what I think it is. This is my who, which clause, so I'm going to box it in so that Mrs. Hill, when she sees it, I can point it right out to her and tell her that I understand this. If they haven't gone through and checked these off, it is so very obvious because their paper doesn't have all those colored marks all over it. Yes, yes, they do. And that way, it's a great visual check for me, too, to see that they understand that a strong adjective means a descriptive word. You know, they have the chants and the jingles that we learn in Shirley Grammar and adjective answers, and we go through all of those. But for them to be able to say, here it is in my sentence, it's them taking ownership of, I understand grammar. I'm getting it.
So did you make this dress up list per paragraph for every page, for every paper you have to do? You
I
make
do.
It up?
Well, some of them have been handed down to me, but yes. They always have.
You're going to vary your paragraph, what's required in there?
Well, at the point where I have handed this out, we have definitely covered these, whether it's been that year and just reviewing because they've covered it in third or fourth grade, or if it's something new. I can tell you that when we did this one this year, simile was still very hard for my students. So while we had talked about it and discussed it, this one, simile was very hard for them to find. Each from year to year, depending on where your students are, you might have to say, when we do this writing, we may not include all of these dress-ups. You may have to alter it just a little bit. But for the most part, they're at this point.
But like, as you advance during the year, do you have whatever you have covered for each paragraph required in each paragraph?
Pretty much, because we're building. We're building and we're expanding. Yes,
so
to answer your question. And then, the other thing that they get, and I don't think that you have this one, but I brought it for you, this is the rubric that they know they're going to be graded with. They already know ahead of time, this is what is expected of me. And you can see that each of the LY words, LY opener, strong adjective, strong verb, everything that was required of them in the paragraphs, that's where they're getting their points for their grade. Okay? And that's not in your in your packet. Now, All That Glitters came from, and let me put this back up here so that you can see, we make sure, I always try to make sure that what we are writing about, like I said, goes along with the subject that I have been teaching. And so I hold off a little bit until we get to the point where we are already talking about the jewelry making in Egypt. This gives them knowledge for two sets of subjects, writing, of course, but also this gives them the process of how jewelry is made and works when we get to our history in the afternoon, that they already have something to work with and we can have a good discussion because they have read this. They've gained just knowledge from it. And so it works hand in hand. It also incorporates our literature as well, because while I am teaching ancient Egypt, we are also reading the Golden Goblet. And that book has a lot of vocabulary that my students are not familiar with. And so as we're going through something like this, they might come across words such as granulation and soldering that they have probably never even heard before. So this is a great time also to talk about the vocabulary for the two reasons. Well, when I reuse this, because soldering would probably be one of my key words in my outline, then we have to stop and take a break and build their vocabulary there. But then what is so incredible is that when we get to our history class and we're discussing it, and I assign someone to be the jewelry maker for our class project, that word pops back up again. And they feel like they have become more of an expert on the process of jewelry making because they've had to write about it. Okay? Moving on, the next one, under utilizing various subjects, and I've kind of alluded to this already, is literature. What a great way to build your writing program right out of your literature. And where you should start is in your read aloud. Every morning after we do our morning routine is my read aloud time. And we are fortunate because we have a pretty incredible classical literature selection to choose from. And so these really rich vocabulary books, themes, we're able to read out loud to our students and engage them and pull them into mystery or pull them into something historical. And in the process, I'll be reading aloud and I'll say, oh, what a great simile. Did you hear that? And we'll go back and we'll look at it. When you are working in your literature book, the first one that we read as a class in fifth grade is Shiloh. And as we're going through there, because this year was hard with similes and metaphors, we took our highlighters. And any time that we came across a simile or a metaphor, we highlighted it. So my students' books were written in.
Ah! Did they keep them? Or
yes. Yes.
Yes,
but they have that tool, and when they're writing and they get up to edit with me and they say, I don't know what a simile is, I can't remember how to do that, they have all of these resources in front of them. They can go back, and where I have picked out something out of the Bible as we've been going through and studying and came across one and they've highlighted it, they can go back and look at that and say, oh, that's how you do that. Or they can go back to their literature book and they can look in Shiloh and say, oh yeah, I remember, this is how the author used a simile or a metaphor. And those are the ones that I'm picking on because that was what was weak this year for us. But in your packet, if you'll look for the page that says Beagles, and you can see it's another primary source. Now this is one that we start, and it's very, very basic. You can see that it's different from the All the Glitters page. This is one of the first pieces of writing they do in fifth grade. We take it slow because what we are trying to do is make sure that they truly get it, and quality is way better than quantity. And so if it is just one paragraph, we want it to be the very best paragraph that they can possibly produce. And you can see how short this paragraph is. They still follow, and we still try to have them stick to, you know, the same number of sentences, but it is incredible the dress-ups that they can include. And of course, here's the first checklist that they usually see, and it tells them everything is spelled out for them. In the rough draft, they are supposed to skip lines on their notebook paper, and it says write in cursive and include at least one strong adjective, include at least one strong verb. This is a great way for me to see from the very beginning that they understand that. In the editing, it gives them several things for them to do to check off, and then the final draft. We always build from here. Okay? What was very helpful, while most of my students probably know what a beagle is, that is the main character in Shiloh. And so it's great to pull in something to just give them a little bit more information about, for instance, what this particular dog looks like. And of course, which of your students would not like to write about animals? I mean, that's a given. So try to capitalize on what you know that their interests are. Okay?
So did you put this handout together? It says adapted from the encyclopedia.
I actually can't take credit for it. It is from a book, but I can't take credit for it. Yeah, another teacher did it for us. Let's move on to B, utilize various genres. One of the things that my students really enjoyed this year, and you can find it, they really loved the fairy tales that we covered, and we used The Imitation in Writing, Matt Whitling, and they're fun. They're not very difficult to understand. Some of them are probably stories that they've heard before. And these, as you can tell, incorporate dialogue. So it's not just a piece of prose where they're just, you know, reading right through. This, they're having to look at how everything is set up, very much like the literature books that they come across that you have assigned to them, their take-home readers. They are putting their eyes on basically the same thing that they have been reading. And, for example, with the Three Billy Goats Gruff, it was something they had heard since they were little kids. So it was comfortable to an extent, and they weren't overwhelmed by it. And the first thing that we did, and you have this one as well, is we went through and we highlighted these vocabulary words that were at the top of their page. These were the words that we felt like were probably words that they had not seen or maybe weren't quite sure of. And we went through and highlighted them, looked at the context of the sentence before we even touched a dictionary, and tried to look for our context clues to tell us what those words were. Most of my students were able to do that really well. But to check ourselves, I had them break up into little teams, and they took a dictionary and they looked to see if they were correct. So we would jot down a few little notes on the overhead. What do you think a troll is? What picture do you get of him in your mind? What do you think a troll looks like? And then when we looked it up in the dictionary, we looked to confirm whether we were correct or not. This would probably be one day of writing. This would be all that we would cover in that section. The next day, we would start looking at the plot and trying to write just a simple little sentence or phrase that describes each of these. And this is after we have read it as a class together. And then you can see the third section is we start identifying the characters. To be a good writer, you have to look at that too. We're not just trying to get our students to write without... when they write with a prompt, we're not wanting them just to write some ideas down. We also want them to be able to write stories. And to do that, they have to know these elements of a story. What is a character? What does that mean? What's a main character? Are you going to mention just the little mouse that was in there? Did he say anything? Or are you going to talk about the main characters being the goats and the troll? And then, of course, their last little assignment there is to rewrite the fairy tale, which is really actually their favorite part, because by the time they've done all of this, they have their own ideas. The first few fairy tales that we do, I have them stick with the same characters. But for this one, I let them keep the same idea of the story with three main characters and an enemy, an antagonist like the troll, and then... But they could use other types of animals. I had a student who decided to use three horses and a horse trainer. And the horse trainer was very unkind to the horses, and the horses were trying to run away across the bridge. And her story was probably 8 pages long. She just kept going and kept flowing, and the ideas were there. So when they seem to be getting a grasp on it, you can let them bring in their own characters as long as they stick to the same flow of the idea of the story. And it tells them specifically, include and underline all the vocabulary words. There was a reason that we went over those. It is to build your vocabulary so that you can reuse it. If you can reproduce these words, and I let them vary it a little bit for like suede, if it were swaying or sways, I would let them do that because that's still the general idea. And of course, they had to underline them so that they could point them out very quickly. And it tells them exactly what format to put it in, three separate paragraphs, just what they see here when they're doing their plot. And of course, it was three sections on the original. Okay. What was a lot of fun for us is to take it another step, and we always prepare for an event night, and usually it's in February, and it's a night that we showcase all of the things that our students have done throughout the year for their parents, for grandparents, for anyone who might be considering placing their child in our school. And it really is just kind of a celebration of everything that they have accomplished throughout the year. And this past year, the students, I let them take a vote, but they wanted to make this into a play. and perform it, which was incredible because, once again, we're taking another genre. They had to write a play. They had to look at stage direction. They had to look at how you set up each character and making sure that they're talking with one another and that it makes sense and that there is a flow and that it stays true to the story. And we had little auditions, and we went through just this whole theatrical production, and we talked about what would a character wear, what would a goat, how are you going to put that on stage? And the whole time, as they're pulling out these ideas and they're getting excited about, oh, and we could have our big goat say it like this, and the bridge could talk, because we had to have enough roles. And we're talking about, okay, well, how do you make a bridge talk? The whole time, you know what they're doing? They're scribbling it down. They're writing it out. They're getting all those ideas formulated. And then, in our group, we start talking about, okay, let's start making sentences. We can't just have little blips here and there and little ideas. Let's formulate it. Let's flesh it all out. And by the time we were finished with this play, I can tell you, they were so proud of themselves and didn't realize that they were writing. They thought they were acting, which is exactly what they were doing. But what they were writing on paper came to life for them. And they didn't realize that they were using things like the dress-ups from that checklist. They weren't checking it off. In this situation, but to hear, and I think I have it, it's in your packet, if you'll look for it. I want you to look, it's behind Pharaoh's feet. I'm going to talk about that one in a minute. But look how they included prepositional phrases, once upon a time, and they said, oh, we use that all the time when we talk about fairy tales. That's a prepositional phrase, Mrs. Hill, we understand that. We looked at, let me see if I can find one. I'm craving a plump goat soup, Mrs. Troll says. Craving. Is that a word that your fifth graders usually use? No. But look how it popped up there, because they wanted her to express how she really felt. And sometimes it's easier if you can get your students to pretend to be someone else. Their writing becomes something else, something deeper. So I challenge you to bring those types of things into your classroom as well. You can also see in your packet, they also wrote Pharaoh's feet, and it's not a typo. That's how they wanted to spell it, so that it looked P-H-P-H. But because we study ancient Egypt and we look at all of the different classes of people in society, we went all the way from the pharaoh all the way down to the slave and looked at all the different ways that everyone worked together to make the society work in ancient Egypt. We did a play to present that to our parents, to our families, and once again, as they were thinking about everything that they had learned and they were bringing it all together and culminating this idea of how ancient Egypt was, they were acting it out. And once again, they wrote this. You can see it says written by Group B, because they were Group B. But they wrote all this out, and the ones that had dressed up because of their project, if they had been assigned sculptor, and they could bring an idea into the mix and say, well, when I studied to present my project as a sculptor, I found out that a sculptor does this. And so then they said, oh, you know what? When we do this play, we should have the sculptor say blah, 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 blah. And they went on and on and on. And actually, I had to keep trimming it back because it was going to be a full-length play and we could have done Broadway. And we just had a few minutes. So you can. I hope that you'll read over it later, because it truly is what the fifth graders produced and we're proud of.
Did you tell them to do this, or did you just say do a project? Or did you tell them to write a play?
We told them that we were going to write a play. Yes, I told them that they were going to write a play.
Did they write a play also?
They wrote The Three Billy Goats. Okay. Yes, we had two separate groups working on it at the same time. They knew they were both each working on a play, but they didn't really know much about the other group's play. So that was fun, too, to be able to present it to one another. And, you know, they were able to say, oh, look how they did that. Look how this group did that. What a great idea. And don't you know that we all work the same way? If I see you do something great, then I'm like, I'm going to steal that, and I'm going to use it in my own classroom. That's exactly how kids are. We're all wired that way. If they see something good, they're going to steal it, and they're going to use it. That's why if you're putting great literature into their hands, and they're reading these wonderfully written books, you're going to start seeing that show up in their writing because they liked the way that author formulated that idea. They liked the way that author brought something to life. My students love the Chronicles of Narnia. Well, it's amazing that they also like to write about fantasy. They like to bring that in. They like to try to make trees and plants come to life. Well, great. Great. It's because they've seen it before and they feel comfortable doing that. And if you keep exposing them to all of those things, they're going to build their confidence and believe that they can do it too. So let's move on. Writing in science, do you find that's really hard?
Yeah.
How do you incorporate writing in science? Because for us, we use Delta Science, which is great, and it's hands-on, and they're constantly moving and doing. But one of the ways that I tried to bring writing into the science, which I still have a lot that I need to work on with that, so that I can get them understanding nonfiction and bringing those types of ideas onto paper, which is really, really difficult. What I tried to do, we go through in the fourth quarter, we do all the energy sources and we talk about where our energy comes from and here's the transfer of energy, and we start with very basic things and, oh, we have fabulous lizards in our classroom, and we talk about where the energy comes from to be able to feed the lizards, and we talk about the crickets eat the mustard seeds and the lizards eat the crickets, and we go from there, and that something else in nature would eat the lizards, and we start with very basic ideas there. And then we start building, and one of the hands-on projects that we do is this rubber band propeller, and they have to make it, and they have to look at what provided the energy. I say all of that to say I don't know how to write about that. And so I had to really try to brainstorm. And what I had them do was bring in magazine pictures of energy transfer. And I gave them some examples. It might be something, my family is very big into college basketball, and I love Carolina basketball. And so I said, what if you had a picture from your Sports Illustrated magazine of Tyler dunking the ball? Is that an energy transfer? And we talked about that. So that got their brain started. And so they started bringing in all of these magazine pictures. We made a huge bulletin board of all of this transfer of energy. I had one girl just bring in someone brushing their hair. Very simple. It wasn't a hard assignment for them. And we talked about the Made Our Beautiful collage. The next couple of weeks, we started talking about humans and our role in the environment. And we started about, and you see up there, it says Effie Thinking. That was the name of the unit that we were doing. And we looked at all of those magazine pictures that were brought in. And we talked about whether they were actually helping the environment with whatever they were doing or if they were harming the environment. And from there, they wrote a 3-point paragraph or an expository paper on how they felt about what was happening in that picture. We had one boy bring in a picture of those hand, like not the motorized lawnmowers. And so we talked about how that was probably very helpful for our environment because we weren't having all of the exhaust from the machine and all of the oil spills and all of that. And we had this big, great conversation about it. And it became very easy for the one that had that picture to write about it. And part of what they had to do was, if it was harmful to the environment, make a suggestion on an alternative. And so their creative juices were going, and you know what showed up in those papers? Dress-ups. There were LY words. There were strong adjectives because they were starting to feel a little angry that this person in the picture was actually harming the environment. So, you know, those words popped up into their minds, those strong adjectives of destroying, and they were getting these just images in their mind that just started flowing into the paper. And once again, we talked about what dress-ups I wanted them to include, and I don't have the checklist here with me, but it's very similar to the other ones. Can you put a prepositional phrase in there? How about a because phrase? That would make complete sense for you to say, this is harmful because. So science is probably the one that you're going to have to really dig in a little bit deeper for, but you can do it. And this wasn't a difficult thing for them to do. Moving on, friendly letters. Hopefully in your classroom, you like to do things like pen pals or talking with another classroom, maybe within your own school. For us, my class had been following some girls in an orphanage in Honduras that was related to one of our churches. They had been writing to these girls for years. And so when they got to fifth grade, it was just a natural progression for them to write as well. And it's something that they enjoy. And we're kind of out of the habit of writing in letters. And so we talked briefly. I did not spend, honestly, a long time on this, but just so that they would still know how to write a letter, because in our age of texting and email, you don't formulate letters the way most of us learned how to do that. So just to refresh them, and in our Shirley Grammar, there is a section on letter writing. And so we referred to that briefly and just made sure. And many of, especially your girls, really love to still write sweet letters, and it was a great way for them to connect also to another part of our world. And finally, let's see, weekly journal prompts. That was actually a fun thing for my class. They only did it on Fridays. We had our spelling test, and they had a little Bible verse quiz, and as they were finishing that up, the prompt appeared on the board, and they never knew what it was going to be. This was more just to get some creative ideas out. There wasn't a checklist for it, but it still got them writing. And I just picked up this book. You can probably get it in any teacher resource store. But they loved it because it has things like, how would you react if, and then you can flip these in the middle, and it's always a noun, a bull started a fight. And there, it says on the front of it that there are thousands of different combinations, and that's true. And so my students love to see what kind of crazy combinations we could come up with and write about. And they could fill up pages and pages and pages.
Did you have them all do the same prompt?
Yes, yes, each week. Excuse me, each week they did their the same prompt. And one of their favorites was, it was something like, how would you react if a spider sat down to dinner? Well, that was great because you were able to pull in. What would you say to a spider? What would it do? How big was it? And so they had to use all of those descriptive words.
Did you grade it, or did you?
Their journal was just for fun. But what I did was every month, every 4 weeks, 4 or 5 weeks, I collected them and wrote back to them. And I said, you could develop this more. And I showed them how. Or I would write, this was a great use of adjectives, L-Y words. I went through all the different dress-ups they were used to and say, oh, you could put some more in here, and showed them how. And then I would write a little blip about what I thought.
Every paper?
I would choose one.
Okay, she only had one a week.
Right, so I would choose just one out of their 4 or 5 that I collected, because we just kept in one of those, we call them cow books, those black and white splotchy books, you know. And I would just choose one of their prompts that they really seemed to have taken a lot of time with, and I would write back to them and my idea or my creative thought, so they could see me writing too, because they have to know that writing goes with you and throughout, not just while you're at school that you have to write something, but you do it throughout your life. Yes. I would never let them get away with that. There were times when I would say, write 2 paragraphs, or there would be times that I would say, fill up half a page, because it was different each time. There would be a time where I would say, write 1 really great sentence, really descriptive sentence about this. And they had to pack as much as they could into that sentence. And I was looking to see if they knew how to, you know, form one. Everything that we've been talking in Shirley Grammar, you know, and I would say, write a pattern 4 sentence about this. Well, if they have been listening in grammar, then they know what a pattern 4 sentence is, and they go through and they're looking to include an indirect object and a direct object and predicate nouns and going through all of that. Okay? Going on to book reports, those are a necessity. We always have book reports, but I have some students, I'm sure that you do, that groan and moan, and they just want to read the book, but they don't want to have to write about it. They don't want to, it's just too much. This should be in your packet as well, and this is the form that we use for our written book reports. And I begin by putting all of the dates for the year at the top. That way we can pace it a little bit better. I don't know if your school would choose to adopt that or not, but it is helpful. The parents like to see this is when my student needs to have their book complete by, so they can write.
Do you get it home with the first of the year with the syllabus?
I do, and I send it home each time that we're getting close to a book report as well.
So you send it home?
Twice. Okay. I do. And so here's the format. Everything is spelled out for them. There should not be any guesswork in what you expect from them. Write on notebook paper and don't skip lines, it says. Use cursive handwriting. Write in complete sentences. Check for correct spelling and punctuation. And we go through and it tells them the bare minimum, 4 to 5 sentences. You're going to have those students that do the bare minimum. And what we are trying throughout the year is each time, and they do 4 of these, they do one each quarter, we are trying to build them each time to not do the bare minimum. Yes, sir.
Are these books that you're doing like in your literature class, or is something that they pick and do on their own?
It's something off of our shelf that they choose. We approve it, and what we do is we look at how many pages are in the book, and we assign them 10 pages each night, and then we give them a due date. If there are 200 pages and they're reading 10 pages each night, this is when they should be finished by that book. And so they're constantly, you know, working on those readers. And then probably in a quarter, I had some students that could read 5 or 6 books and read them and understand them. And then that particular girl chose which one of her books she wanted to do her book report on. But their books
so
off of herself.
The same day.
Ours in our class were due the same day. Now, fourth grade, I know they do them as they finish, I believe.
But you said read 10 pages a night.
Mm-hmm. And so if they finish, for instance, like I said, we had this one student in our class this year who flew through books. She loved to read them. So she was able to finish several books to another child's one book. So we just pace it so that way they have enough time to at least complete one book, so they can use it for the due date.
So do you do like, let's say Caddy Little Long. Do you Caddy Little Long and then you have them to answer questions? I mean, do you have certain books that you really go into more detail with reading?
We do. Well, our literature program, we all read a book together as a class.
This is different.
It is. This is something that they're reading at home or they're reading in their spare time. It is homework. It is homework.
Practice at home?
Yes, they do their book report at home. Now, I have allowed them to have time to write the rough draft in class, and we talk about, you know, making sure that they have everything included. For my stragglers, I've had some of them have to go to Ms. Gilpin's office and have more one-on-one time. You're going to have those students that need one-on-one time. They might need you to sit down with them, and I know in your busy day that you're just pulling your hair out thinking, how do I have time for my students that need that guided practice? But hopefully, if you can do it one time with them and really model it for them and sit beside them, they'll understand what you want for the next time.
Have you done a book report modeled as a class on one of your book read-alouds before you ever did this?
We have. It was probably a brief version of this, but we have, so they could see.
And you did it together exactly the same way they copied?
They didn't copy it. We did it on the overhead, and we just discussed it and talked about it. But we had to, it's kind of difficult because we were having to try to think of a book that we all knew together, and we hadn't finished our first literature book. So it was a little difficult, but so they could see how to make everything flow from one to the other. But a great thing to do is, from previous years, provide them an anonymous, not so great book report so they can kind of see where it's weak, and let them tell you where it's weak. Let them read over it and say, oh, that person didn't have at least 5 sentences about why they would recommend this book to another student. And then give them one that's really, really great, and please make sure they're anonymous, but and let them see, wow, this is what she's looking for. Because we all want an example, don't we? I mean, that's me. I want to hear. I want to see what someone else expects of me. Written out. I want to hold it in my hands. And so that your students are the same way. They want to be able to see it. And so the other thing that they get that they love is the rubric. They know from the beginning it follows exactly the checklist that they have, and it tells them how many points are awarded for each one. It's very straightforward, and this is twofold. When the student comes and says, I don't understand why I didn't get this, then you've got it right there in front of them. Well, you didn't do this. This is where it was weak, and you didn't get your points here. And it also helps with the parents if they say, but I thought that my student really wrote a great book report. I think they understood it. Then you say, well, this is what we were looking for, and they had it. to begin with, but this is where it was lacking. And then most of the time your parents say, oh, we'll work on that for next time. And it's a really good dialogue between your parents and you. And then down at the bottom, I liked this. And in grading book reports in the past, before I came to Veritas, there wasn't a section for comments, but I think it's really important to be able to comment back, and not just something like great job or good job. You know, be very specific. If they really did well in one of the sections, then really comment on that and make it individual to them. And if there was, you know, a weak spot where you couldn't give them full points, then talk about that too, and just, you know, a brief little sentence here and there. Okay? And I think we're almost out of time, and I haven't finished my outline there, but basically you can see in the Roman numeral 4, it's the process that we take. We give them a prompt. It could be from a primary source like I showed you with beagles or all the glitters, and we use our highlighters for keywords and the vocabulary. Or it could be a journal prompt that you don't necessarily grade.
When you say highlighters for keywords and vocabulary, mm-hmm. you give them a written?
When they have something like this, when they have all the glitters, okay. they pull out their highlighter, and as we're looking for the keywords in each sentence, they're also highlighting them. It just gives them another visual.
You do it with them?
Mm-hmm. I do. Every time. We always do the key word outline together.
Every
time. So everybody has the keywords. We come to an agreement in the classroom as to what we think the keywords are. This year, I did not let them do a keyword outline on their own. But it gave them the tool so that when they were writing their project for ancient Egypt and ancient Greece, and they were looking in encyclopedias, and they were looking on websites, and they were looking in the books that were in my classroom, that they weren't sitting there writing down word for word everything that was in there. I could say to them, make a keyword outline. Look at the paragraph that you were researching, count how many sentences there are, set it up just like what we do, and that's their chance to do it on their own. You're going to be able to tell when you read a project if it's written right out of the encyclopedia or not.
How often do you do this activity?
This one?
Where you do the guided practice and then have them rewrite it and then have
okay. They probably produced 11 or 12 of these in a year.
So not once a week?
Not once a week, because it takes them a little bit more time, you know, to start formulating their own ideas and the editing process. We want to, I edit with them one-on-one. So they either come up to my desk or I'm at their desk, and we go all the way through. And so that takes some time. And like I said at the beginning, it's more about quality than quantity. You know, we don't want to make little factory children where they were just producing these papers all the time. We really want them to be able to utilize the different elements of writing.
Okay.
Yes?
You're still doing that where you're doing
Yes.
Okay.
We edit everything with them.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. So there's a little bit, section D, about editing with the teacher. They don't edit one another. That's our philosophy at our school. You've probably heard it before, but they don't have enough experience yet to edit one another. And if they don't like whose paper they're editing, are they going to be as objective as you are? Probably not. So it's better for you to be looking for all of those elements too. Okay? And at the bottom, I just hope that you'll read that. You can do it. You can do this. But they need to see your passion. So focus on mastering one technique at a time. You know, don't overwhelm them with, you've got to jump through all of these hoops. Really focus on one. Like I told you from the beginning, simile and metaphor were really hard for my students, so we focused on those a lot. By the end of the year, I feel like most of my students knew simile and metaphor. So I know that I can advance them to sixth grade with them being able to use that rather than just have like a blanket idea about it. So if you want to look at the resources, if you want to look through, this is a great model for you to use. It's by no means should be your writing curriculum, but a great supplement. Thanks for listening. I hope it helps you.
Thank you.